Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we have one spoiler-free review for you, Demonic, upcoming releases and recommendations for the week, our What's This Movie Game, and our From the Outside In topic is The Comeback Kids, actors or directors who were thought to have no career but won our hearts back. Let's get on with the show. My name is Amanda Sink, and I will be your host today. Aaron Peterson has been booted out. We kicked him out. He's gone forever or a week. But with me, we still have John Davenport, co-host. Hey. Hello.
I don't know how I feel about this.
I know. It's weird.
It is very weird.
I know. Like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Do I have to show you more respect than I would show Aaron, or less respect?
Do you show respect to Aaron?
I show Aaron levels of respect.
Okay, all right, fair. I feel like I get a little bit more love and compassion on the side, but on the show I just get a little bit more sass, and I'm fine with that.
Are you paid up?
Money? What's money?
So then, no, you're not. you actually haven't paid for love and compassion lately.
And then we also have Troy Heinrichs with us.
This is so weird for me to be recording with the two of you and not the boss man.
I know. And it feels like we can do whatever we want and we can't get in trouble.
Well, I don't think we get in trouble anyway. Aaron makes his own trouble.
That's true, too.
I don't know. I'm like a little intimidated from him. Like, I feel like if I do something wrong, I'm going to get a talking to. He's like a boss who just doesn't pay us. It's slave labor. That still scares me.
I know it is for me, because he's the one that wrote me to come over here from the other show.
That's your own fault.
You know, I gotta say that there is times where when Aaron's not here, I actually breathe a little bit easier and I don't stutter nearly as much, because I don't know what it is. Maybe there is something about Aaron that's a little bit more intimidating, because I don't want to really... I sit to her the whole time going, I don't want to mess up. I don't want to mess up. I don't want to mess up. And then I start tripping over my words and I'm like, damn it. And then it starts getting worse and worse and worse. And I don't do that as much when he's not here.
John, you just went through a whole thing. You talked really fast, and at no point did you stumble over your words. So I don't think you have a stutter. I think Aaron is the problem here.
I think John does it on purpose. That's what it is.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, let's get on with our news roundup. There's been a lot of interesting things that have come out this week. Netflix's The Witcher Blood Origin adds 10 different cast members and sets their directors. Field of Dreams popped to the top of Amazon's film and TV list after the home run MLB game. And they decided to do a series adaptation from Michael Schur, ordered at Peacock. New York City's indoor vaccine mandate launches this week. Comedian, producer, and writer Wyatt Cenac has sealed a new multi-year exclusive overall deal spanning across Warner Brothers Animation and Cartoon Network studios. Amazon unveiled a trailer for LuLaRich, an investigative docuseries about the LuLaRoe pyramid scheme. And as someone who purchased a lot of LuLaRoe, this thing is crazy. The story is wild. Anyway. Hotel Transylvania 4 is skipping theaters as Sony nears over $100 million deal to stream globally on Amazon Prime Video. Of all of this news, John, what are you excited about? What tickles your fancy?
Honestly, the thing that tickles my fancy the most is this LuLaRoe crap. I want to see all the crap that went on, because I got to tell you, man, as a guy who had to look at so many people wearing that LuLaRoe stuff, I'm just like... Please just show me the dirt, because there's got to be some, because some of those patterns look great and they look nice and stuff, but the rest of it was just ridiculous. And I had a friend of mine. Okay, I'll tell you a quick story about this. So I get a phone call from somebody that says, hey, you got to get on Facebook. And I'm like, what do I got to get on Facebook for? They go, one of your best friends is currently doing a live video, and he is wearing LuLaRoe pants and hawking them on Facebook.
Yes.
And I was like, what? And so I had to go check this out. And so for, and he's a smart guy too. And for him to get roped into this, and he's got like, I don't remember which, I think he had like the Captain America ones on. But
oh, I
it
have
was,
those. Those are cute.
I guess they're cute. I don't know. But the pyramid schemes are something that I always, whenever I see something that's like multi-level marketing or anything like that, I always go, no. My earliest memories of different pyramid schemes really just turn me off to anything that sounds like it. So I'm most excited about that.
Yeah. Once you start to unravel all of the things that went into this scheme, it's more than just an MLM. It's all of the, I don't know, all of the really bad business, unethical practices. I mean, they would force some of the women to like go and have surgeries down in Mexico to like continue to be part of the top selling team. It's just crazy. And so I hope this is like a very deep dive into all of the madness that went on. But John, I don't think you're really needing to complain about having to look at all the people who wore LuLaRoe, because that's booties. Nobody's complaining about looking at booties.
When it was a great booty, yeah, it's fine. But, you know, there was a certain breed of booty that landed in LuLaRoe the most, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Before you get fired? Yeah.
Yes.
Troy, what are you excited to talk about?
That's John at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Field of Dreams, I thought, was an interesting thing that they went and built the entire baseball stadium, and they had the whole Yankees, White Sox, and literally Kevin Costner staring for 800 minutes as this thing opened up. Like, I get it, NBC. He can stare into something and it's awesome, but we don't need it for 800 minutes. Like, that opening was so damn long. Just get to the game already. But a TV series based on this, like, I'm just... No. Lightning in a bottle. It was magical when it was on. It was great. It sparked the whole everybody come to Iowa craze. We do not need a TV series for Field of Dreams. It just ruins the whole concept. And if it's going to be great, great. I'm not going to watch it. It just does not need to be here.
Yeah, that's one of those things that makes me kind of sad. I mean, sure, there's a lot of things out there that needs to be remade and is ready for a remake, but you're right. Field of Dreams is one of those things that's lightning in a bottle. Like, you can't really remake that and have the same sort of impact.
I just don't have an interest in it. I mean, I like the movie. The movie's great, but I had never in my life, even after seeing the movie, have been like, man, I want a TV show out of this. Just, it's not there.
Yeah, I mean, like, you think about baseball movies are like classics, right? The Natural, Bull Durham, even Angels in the Outfield and stuff like that. The Rookie.
Major League.
A League of Their Own.
Yes. I mean, you go on for
Shout
years.
Shout out Rockford Peaches.
For all of the baseball movies that are out there, the one that you could probably say would be a great TV series, you could totally do Bad News Bears as a TV series.
I think they did for a little while.
I mean, you could do that now and people would still watch it today. I mean, if they can bring back the Mighty Ducks as a TV form instead of a movie on Disney Plus, like, you could totally do Bad News Bears as a series. But like, what is this going to be about? Like we go around the country into 50 states and find a kid who got left by his dad and just wanted to play catch, and we just follow a different anthology story for the entire
that
series. I mean,
depressing.
Kind of. Yeah, exactly.
Catch the TV show.
Oh, but there's probably kids who would relate. I mean, I guess there's probably a way to spin it so that way there's just one family it's focusing on, one kid, and how they inspire others. And I guess that, you know, they can turn anything into a TV show. But I just, at this moment, there's nothing about it that strikes me as interesting.
And it's on Peacock.
That too.
Ooh, they should mix it with Picard.
Why is that?
Like, you know, Klingons showing up and they're the ones coming out of the Field of Dreams.
Only you would come up with something that weird.
If it was a Star Trek baseball movie, I'd be down with that.
You guys
Paramount
are so
Plus,
weird.
Are you listening? Because this isn't going to last on Peacock anyway, because no one's going to watch it on Peacock.
Are you guys worried about what this Hotel Transylvania 4 skipping theaters and going straight to Amazon Prime Video could mean for theaters, or could mean for other big blockbuster releases? I know some of the conversation has been about, will this affect No Time to Die, 007?
Well, also Carnage, actually. Is it Carnage?
Venom, yeah.
Yeah, Venom got pushed back also. Mm-hmm. So, like, these are indications that the theater industry and the movie industry in general are starting to get a little bit worried about what's going on with health-wise in the country.
The health thing aside, right, because, I mean, that's something that's serious and we have to take it very seriously if it were to come to pass. I think the bigger news here is that children under 12 are not vaccinated yet. So I think it's great that they're actually moving this to the streaming service, because the kids need something too. I mean, they've been like cooped up all year. They're finally going back to school. Like, give them something that they can actually enjoy with their family, with their friends, if they want to get a party together, if it's totally safe to do so. I think this is a great move, because that's exactly the target audience, and they'll make a crap ton of money through new subscribers by making this happen. So kudos on them for thinking about the under 12 crowd for once and not just the adults.
I'm not sure that they're going to make a whole lot of money out of this, because I don't know. I know a lot of people who already have Amazon Prime Video, and they would have made so much money in theaters. But to your point, with New York City, just as an example, because they're not the only one who's considered this, they're making the vaccine a mandate for indoor venues. So then children who can't have the vaccine, they're already kind of limited in terms of that. But then parents who don't want their kids going out unvaccinated, that's another risk. And so that limits their ability to get all of that money. So they're at disadvantage no matter what. And this is probably the best option they have. I don't know that this signals anything in my mind of huge concern for the movie industry. Like, there are some individuals who think that that's a concern. I don't know that we're there yet. I think it's just a preemptive response to the Delta variant and some of the already state changes that are happening. I've seen a lot of places that are rolling back on some of their restrictions and things like that and their mandates. So it could affect movie theaters even further.
I think the dollar value is just insane. A movie like Hotel Transylvania making $100 million in the theater doesn't sound like as feasible as you think. Like, maybe that's the thing too. Like, maybe that's why they're jumping for it. But for Amazon to give them $100 million, that's a huge chunk of change. Or maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, it could make $100 million in the theater. I mean, it is the fourth movie, so I don't think that it's going to do like what the first movie would have done when you're coming out of the gates in that opening weekend. So, yeah, it could get $200 million, maybe a little bit over during the course of its run. But I think what's great here is that Sony collects that money like almost up front now, rather than having to wait for those box offices to come in. So it's great for Sony. I don't think it's really an issue for the theaters, other than the fact that, I mean, the virus and the variants and the rules, that's what's going to kill the theater, not because Sony decided to put this on streaming.
Yeah.
You know, I got to just cough up a little bit of like what just happened mentally. I'm sure there's some listeners who just picked up what happened to me mentally, was that I'm sitting here going like $100 million is a lot of money. But in my brain is going, that's, you know, it's $1 billion. That's what my brain is trying to tell me $100 million is. And then what happened is my brain finally decided to start working and go, $100 million is $100 million, dummy. And that's why I stopped mid-sentence.
Yeah, I figured you finally came to that conclusion, because the movies do, I mean, individually, they've accumulated more than that in when they've released in theaters before.
Right.
Like, it's a total of $1.3 billion globally for the first three. So they could probably in any normal situation easily capture $100 million. But now they're probably wondering, with capacity limits, the changes in the areas and people, the concern about people even going to venues, will they show up to the movie theater right now? Are they too afraid? Or, you know, all of those different things are of concern. So,
right.
Yeah. It's like playing the stock market right now. You can think that you're going to put in a stock and it's going to do well or it could do bad. The only thing you can do is take a guess, right? And at this point, that's all we're doing is we're guessing that because we're going to lose out on people attending the theater, we're not going to make $100 million. So therefore, why don't we take the $100 million sure money and at least get our recoup our expenses and at least make some profit, may not be as much profit, but at least we can put something out there and keep the name out there and keep the content out there and keep this going. Because obviously, if they don't put it out there after a while, they eventually would lose the rights to this franchise if they never put anything back out there. So keeping this keeps it inside of the Sony coffins, if you will, for Transylvania 5, 6, 7. I see what you did there.
Oh, boy. You did that.
Somebody had to bring the humor this week.
Oh, goodness. Let's move on to our spoiler-free reviews. We only have one because we are all slackers. I mean, honestly, I guess Aaron is the one who does most of the work because he does go to the movie theaters more than us. So all we have is Demonic, but John, you saw this one, and so did Aaron. His review's up on our website. It's about a young woman who unleashes terrifying demons when supernatural forces at the root of a decades-old rift between mother and daughter are ruthlessly revealed. First question, is this even scary? It's August. There's a horror movie coming out. My first question is it scary?
I'm sure someone's going to watch this and find things to be scared of, but the thing that I found like fascinating about the fear in this is more on the visual sense. And what you don't know is that the way the movie tells its story is that the demonic presence is actually trapped inside of a woman, and to get into and find out more about this demonic presence, these doctors insert her daughter mentally. So it's kind of like a combination of, I would say, The Cell and Stay Alive as far as like the subject matter is concerned. And they insert their daughter visually into this woman's subconscious or consciousness while she's, you know, in this trapped and she's locked in syndrome. The visuals when she's in the digital world are okay. It's interesting and it's well done, but it's not necessarily anything that's scary. But the avatar for the demonic presence, and when you actually see the demonic presence, that thing actually is a really cool design, and it's a shame that it's not in the movie more often. The movie has a lot of problems with silence. You know, it's trying to play that. You know, I'm going to use silence to build tension here, but it doesn't know how to do that. So if you ask me if it's scary, not really, but somebody might find it scary.
So that's interesting because in Aaron's review, he had a different feeling about the demonic presence, the representation of that thing, and said it looked more like an overgrown crow costume from last year's Halloween sale. That is a quote directly from the review.
I can see where he's coming from on that. I really can. There's a fluidity to it, and there's a liquidness to it that is kind of nice, and it's just creepy. It just doesn't fit in with the rest of the movie, so I thought it was weird.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about the script. Neil Blomkamp, who did District 9, is the writer and director, and it sounds like the concept behind this film is really interesting, but from my understanding of Aaron's review is that the third act is where the story starts to lose the audience because it tries to go with different plot points and loses some of that cleverness. Did you have that same reaction to the script in the third act?
Yeah, in the third act, it definitely takes this surprising left turn that you don't really see. Well, they hint to it, but when they actually take the turn, it doesn't feel like the same movie anymore. And it's problematic. And now it was really just troublesome to watch how this movie was executed because, like, when it was offered to me to watch it, I was really excited because it's Neil Blomkamp. And there's been a ton of his movies that I've watched and I really enjoyed. And I thought the storytelling was great and very well, you know, plotted out. And this movie just doesn't have that. So, it seems a lot more like somebody said, I have a really cool idea of how, like, we can integrate technology with demon possession and it would be fun, but they didn't really bother writing a story to go along with that.
Fair enough. Let's talk a little bit about the lead, who I assume has most of the screen time here, Carly Pope, who's yes. the young woman, and her mother is the one that she thinks is, you know, has something going on. What is her presence like? Is she all-consuming? Is she only a standout because maybe the other casting is lacking? How does that dynamic look in Demonic?
She's not all-consuming. She actually feels small on screen for the majority of the movie. The thing I would say about her is that she's doing the best she can with the tools she's given. Unfortunately, it's not enough to bring this movie to a higher level of competency. It's rough. It feels like a rough movie. It feels like a rough draft to an idea. And unfortunately, it bleeds through to just about every single level. And the acting isn't... what's the word I'm looking for? It's the word that the acting doesn't do anything to help what's going on here.
So if the full price of admission were $10, what would you give Demonic?
Demonic's $4 for me.
Okay. All right. Pretty close to what Aaron thought as well. Sounds a little disappointing for a Neil Blomkamp film.
It really was. There's some really cool ideas here, but if you want to see something that executes this better, The Cell is one movie that I can think of that executes this idea better. Another one is for like a fun, scary romp of a horror flick, the Stay Alive, that uses the same sort of ideas, is another great idea, great movie to stick with if you want something scary. I would kind of skip this one.
Oof. Okay. On a happier note, Patreon. The money for this podcast comes from our own pockets, but we are supported by listeners who are super generous like all of you. So if you want to contribute to The Hollywood Outsider, get additional extra content, including things like Bad Movie Night, it's not actually, I feel like I need to clarify, it's not actually movies we think are bad. It's movies that critics think are bad that we like. We need to clarify that. So we're not just like down and on National Treasure, for example, August is movie. But it's movies we like, and we talk about it, and we go through it. And there's even some really silly five-star reviews at the end of the episode. So if you want that additional content, go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. There's different tiers that you can get additional content from. And if you want to be a guest on the show, you can even contribute at the $20 level, and you get to come hang out with us if that sounds interesting to you. If you want John to yell at you and be mean, that's your choice.
If you want to make fun of Amanda, you can do that as well.
Well, people could do that for free, so. That's what the internet's for, right?
Right.
Well, let's move to our From the Outside In topic, the Comeback Kids. This week, we're going to discuss our favorite actors or directors who, at some point, were thought to have no career but came back to reprise their fame. We'll also mention ones that we wish would get a comeback if we have any. This is going to be pretty laid back, but we're going to have fun with it, and I think this is going to be a really great discussion, which was prompted by Brendan Fraser's, a little bit of a revival, if you will, where the internet is showing him lots of love and he cried.
You know, I think I've made it very clear for years now that Brendan Fraser needs to come back. And this whole Brendan Fraser is slowly but surely coming back into the auspice of everyone is really making me happy.
Isn't it just like the joy we needed in our lives this month?
Oh, absolutely. This is it. And like to see how he's just like a great and humble guy about the whole thing. And, you know, and people think that what we're trying to rejoice is the return of the 1990s Brendan Fraser, or, you know, with the awesome hair and the amazing body. But no, what we're really being happy about is this guy who put himself through literal hell for art and ended up biting him in the ass for it, because now he lives with like chronic pain in his back because he got hurt, and slowly but surely he's coming back and he doesn't look like the same man, but he is, you know, his heart and soul is still there, and that's what's great to see.
Yeah.
I was listening to oh my gosh, Fake Doctors, Real Friends with Zach and Donald, Zach Braff mm-hmm. and Donald Faison doing the Scrubs mm-hmm. rewatch, and just watching Brendan Fraser on Scrubs again in those episodes that he's on as Dr. Cox's brother.
It's stepbrother. Oh, no, brother-in-law.
Brother-in-law, yeah. I mean, it's just, he's such a gem. And to see him being able to get the love and support that he's getting on the internet, and then just seeing him tear up in this video, I was just like, man, like, give that guy whatever franchise he wants.
Yeah.
That is so, so awesome how he reacted to the fans. And he just, I mean, most of the stuff he's ever done, I thought he's been really, The Mummy was great. Encino Man was great. I mean, all of it was just great. Or even Blast from the Past was great. Can do no wrong, really.
Bedazzled. You know, the thing about his story arc in Scrubs, I think he's only on a total of 2 or 3 episodes, but, and I've rewatched Scrubs a few times, and that show has done really good job at, you know, bringing in the humor and a lot of heart and mixing around with it in a fun way. But his episodes, they have like the most feels.
All the feels.
Yeah.
So good. So good.
Troy, I want to ask you what and who maybe determines the end of someone's career in the entertainment industry? Because when we're talking about people coming back to reprise their fame, something happens usually to set that down and say, nah, you're not here. And we'll leave the Me Too part of it aside for this discussion. Yes, that's coming from me. We'll talk about the other things that can affect someone's career in the entertainment industry. But what for you? What is it that determines that ending?
I mean, I think it's going to be more along the lines of fans, to be honest, because I don't think anybody can really say that they're out of the industry. You could be gone a while and still make a comeback depending on what you're doing. I think the only thing that really signifies the end of your career is whether or not the fans have ostracized you on one of these social media outlets because you were a pedophile or because you beat women or treated women incorrectly or unfairly, or something that's just a blight that literally turns everyone against you where you're completely unmarketable by the companies. Otherwise, if it's self-induced, right, thinking like Drew Barrymore, Johnny Depp, and all these other things, it's just, those are things that you can bounce back from fairly easily, right? Go get some help, check yourself in. It's totally overcomable, and their skill and their craft is still their skill and their craft. If they can put something on tape that someone goes, oh, I resonate with that, they can market it and they can put it out there because they're still fans, even though they may have done some poor choices in their life.
You know, I think about people like Bruce Willis, who, though he's still out there making movies, he's not the person that I jump to go see a movie for anymore. Like he, especially like he used to be in the 90s and the aughts, you know. There's also Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage was somebody that I would say, you know, besides I'm a treasure protector, but the thing about Nicolas Cage is that has never stopped making movies. He's just at this point making whatever he can to pay back his tax bill on top of continuing to live this lavish lifestyle. But people keep on throwing him money. But, you know, I can't remember the last time I saw a new Nicolas Cage movie on purpose.
Mandy probably was the only one of recent.
No, I didn't even see that one.
Oh, good thing you didn't.
Right.
But these, there is Prisoners of the Ghostland, and I know that John will end up watching that and somehow, for some reason, loving it. I bet you. I would actually make a money bet that if he watches it, he'll enjoy it because it's so ludicrous and somehow kind of awesome.
But you have to make that bet without him being here, because now he's just going to be like, yeah, I completely hated it. It is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here you go, fair. Troy. Here's your cash.
Here's your cash. Because, you know, because Troy and I are bros like that.
Exactly.
Ouch. This just cut me out of this. Rude. I think there's still an ability for someone to make so many bad movies that they get cut out and their career kind of comes to an end. Bruce Willis was the first example. I think he will find himself in that position. He's not fully there yet. People will still watch movies with him. But if he doesn't turn it around and stop phoning it in, because it seems like he's just, He's just there. Like, it's sure, it's Bruce Willis. It used to be like, oh, it's Bruce Willis. Like,
right.
He used to be so fun and energetic and cool and just like the women wanted to be with him and the dudes wanted to be him because he just had that vibe about him on screen and he just doesn't have that presence anymore. And I think that can affect your career because to Troy's point, I really think it's the fans. It's not the distributors. It's not their agents. They can do a lot of things to fix it or to make it worse. But it ultimately is, what are we going to pay to see on screen? And we'll decide that. And there's some actors that when you make crappy movies, they don't think that you're going to get to fame at all. I think there was a point where Keanu Reeves, probably when he did Point Break, they probably didn't think he was going to have a successful career like he does now.
Well, even Keanu Reeves at one point took a step back. And that's some of the things that happens. Is sometimes you see these self-imposed step backs that people take. You know, I think of Daniel Radcliffe, who made like, you know, giving the middle finger to the world money, and he got to take a step back, and now he just shows up for things he absolutely wants to show up for. The kid who's playing Batman again that everyone loves all of a sudden, what's his name?
Oh,
from Twilight.
Robert Pattinson.
Robert Pattinson's another one who made middle finger to the world money, and now he gets to show up whenever he wants. You know,
yeah.
That's the thing. It's like some of these people are self-imposed. But the thing about, let's say, Brendan Fraser, for example, that wasn't necessarily a self-imposed thing that happened to him. He made a couple of bad movie decisions. So he did Journey to the Center of the Earth. It wasn't a bad movie. It wasn't poorly received. And then when it came to making the sequel, they didn't bring back the director. And so because they didn't bring back the director, he actually said, well, if you're not going to bring back the director, you can't have me. And they said, that's cool. Aww. We're going to get The Rock to replace you with. And he... You know, but he was trying to do the stand up thing by standing up for the director that, you know, helped him with that movie. And then around the same time, he did a Bugs Bunny movie that didn't work out for him. And then there was that poorly timed, like, somebody made a joke at one of those, I think it's the Golden Globes, and he does this whole slap point thing while he's laughing, and he looked so ridiculous when he did it. The internet turned it into a joke, and all of a sudden you had like this perfect storm of things that happened all at once that kind of made him start taking that step back and made him unhirable, and it was pretty rough for him.
Which again, fans.
Right.
Yeah. That's kind of sad when you make the story like that.
Yeah, it really is sad because a lot of those things was like him being a stand-up guy, him trying to do the best he could for the people that he worked with before, or him, you know, deciding he's going to go. I think at the Bugs Bunny, which I keep on forgetting the name of that movie, but that movie did not do well. And it didn't look good for him to do it. But I think he had to do it because at the time he was going through his divorce. And one of the other reasons why he took a step back was because I believe one of his sons was autistic while all this was going on. So it was a lot of things all at once that really just made it hard for him.
I'm glad you mentioned Pattinson too, because you know, since his reemergence after the Twilight stuff, I don't think he's done anything really horrible, to be quite honest.
No, he hasn't.
Tenet, he was great in Tenet. Love that character. The Devil All the Time that Aaron recommended here on this very podcast on Netflix. I watched it. He is so good in that as the preacher. The accent just nails it. And then, of course, to be able to land the Batman and then go from there. I think that he's a great example of someone who can just be like, yeah, I was the pretty boy, but now I'm actually an actor.
Well, and it was to the point for him where most people laughed at him as, you know, you wouldn't consider him being a serious actor in any capacity because it was like, he's the guy who sparkles. And so how do you take that mindset from so many people, like globally? I mean, Twilight was such a massive series. And when they got put into film, it was just bonkers. Women of all ages. I remember working at the movie theater and seeing like, 70-year-old women wearing crop tops, literal crop tops that said like Team Edward and Team Jacob. It was just insane. And so how do you take everybody's perception of who you are and completely flip the script? And he's managed to do that. And it's crazy because we judged him solely on that one franchise. But even I, and I will be totally transparent, was like, I don't buy him as an actor. Like, I'm not going to watch movies he's in because I've seen what he's done. And he was terrible in Twilight. Terrible. He just did not have that. He didn't have the spark. But when you see him and everything since then, it's like, man, he was just, that was just not a good fit for him. That's all. So who has had the greatest comeback? We've talked about some of them that you guys have enjoyed, but who's had the greatest comeback in your mind? And what was the movie that gave them their return?
Well, we can't have this conversation without having to bring up Robert Downey Jr., of course.
Yes.
You know, let's take, he was Hollywood kryptonite for the longest time. And it has nothing to do with anything other than the fact of the way he was living his life at the time. He was skipping out in the middle of movies. He was unreliable. All these things made him nearly unhireable to Hollywood. And when he started getting his life straight, you know, he had a hard time getting back into the acting scene. And if it wasn't for Jon Favreau to turn around and just bet the farm that Robert Downey Jr. can show up and be Iron Man, he wouldn't have the career that he has today. And it was that one story, that one movie that really brought him back into what makes him a great actor. It's always been his kind of trademark to be who he is now. He's maybe a lot more animated about it than he used to ever be. But again, it's how do you not talk about Robert Downey Jr. when you come to this?
And I think to understand the gravity of how unhireable he was, part of it was how expensive he was, not because of the ticket to have him on, but the insurance liability. Because that's right. It was so expensive, they couldn't and they wouldn't pay for it until Mel Gibson actually paid his liability insurance so that way he could be in a movie. Like, as much as we don't like Mel Gibson, he did do kind of an amazing thing and paid for that liability insurance so that way he could be in a movie. And since then, he's only done amazing things. And then he got into Iron Man. He got Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is a magnificent film if you haven't seen it. And Gothica, I love Gothica. And I don't know. It's just amazing to me to see someone transform their life. You know, just anybody, actor right. or not. To see someone go from being such a belligerent drunk where he was like literally breaking into people's houses and falling asleep in their bed to what we now see as a hero because of who he's become and the character he's played as Iron Man. You literally bring him into cancer centers so that way little kids can take pictures with him and enjoy their life with him. And that's where his life has transitioned to. It's just amazing to me. Like it is truly impressive. When I think about people who have rehabilitated themselves celebrity-wise, I know Dax Shepard gets a lot of praise, particularly because he's so vocal about it on his podcast. And I am not saying I do not, you know, I'm with him. He's done a lot. But I think about Robert Downey Jr. as like the epitome of going from the bottom to the top. Troy, who is it for you? Because I think John and I are on the same page. It's got to be RDJ.
I'm going to say from the similar concepts, I think Drew Barrymore really did a real great comeback because she started out obviously as a child actor to, you know, no fault of her own, right? That parents are putting her in there, but just with all that fame at a very early age, you know, turned to drugs and alcohol and just really went on a downward spiral. So for her to be able to come back and just knock it out of the park with all the rom-coms, you know, between The Wedding Singer and Never Been Kissed and 50 First Dates and, I mean, all of that was just, it's such a joy to just watch her and then everything she's doing now in her career as well. So I think, you know, Drew is probably one that comes up from, you know, maybe on the female side versus the Robert Downey Jr. on the male side. I think Drew's just done a really fantastic job to kind of make her own way and make her own brand and really took her life by the horns in order to get it back on track and do amazing things.
Right. That's a good point. That's a really good point. I remember when, I remember the 80s and 90s when it was like, the, she was the first Robert Downey Jr. of the time. And the stories were all about how she was breaking in the homes or doing something she shouldn't be doing. And she was way younger also. So, it was pretty, it's, I do remember those times. You know, I can't, you know, I also think about, there's actually a great story from Paul Bettany. Do you guys know this one?
No, I don't know a Paul Bettany story.
So Paul Bettany, before he became Jarvis, before he became his career started to pick back up again. He had been going to audition after audition, and my first introduction to Paul Bettany was A Knight's Tale, and he showed up quite a bit through the years after Knight's Tale in different movies, but. There was a period in the aughts where he wasn't getting anything. And there's a story that he tells where he has just left a meeting with his agent. And his agent finally sits him down and says to him, Paul, nobody's calling for you. No one's going to be calling for you. Nobody wants you to work for them. And you're not going to get a job. You have to face the fact that you're no longer an actor. And so he says he's sitting there on the curb, you know, feet in the street, just kind of thinking about everything this agent told him. And the next thing that happens, his phone starts ringing, and it's John Favreau saying, "Hey, do you want to voice this character?" And that's the voice of Jarvis, who then becomes Vision. And all of a sudden, Paul Bettany starts getting, you know, roles again.
Wow, I didn't know that one. Another one that comes to mind is Mickey Rourke. Another actor who was unbearable to work with. People just didn't like him. And he was good for a while, and then something happened and the fame got to him, and they just were like, nope, not going to happen. And after he took a break, got a few surgeries, came back, he was able to come
after
back.
After his third or fourth phase?
Yeah. He came back to Sin City. I mean, he did a few others like Rainmaker and stuff, but Sin City, I think, was his big break back into acting. Because it was never that he lost his talent. And I think that's the thing John, I think it was trying to get across earlier, is that they never lose any of their talents.
That was Troy.
Oh, that was Troy. Well, how modest of you to give the credit back to him.
We look the same. We both wear glasses.
Yeah,
Troy and I are bros.
Yeah, but it's not that their talent ever goes away. It's something that just seems so natural to them. It's a part of who they are. Like, John could make a bunch of terrible life decisions and go on some binger for like 3 years. But if he sobered up and came back to drawing, we'd all be like, yeah, he's an artist. That's just who he is. So that talent doesn't go away. And that's the thing with these people. It's just about if they can get their lives back together, and if the public can see that they want them back, then they have a chance.
Yeah, I remember that about Mickey Rourke. Like, he did absolutely disappear. And if it wasn't for Sin City, and he was a revelation as Marv. Like, you know, as much as it's hard to say that about a movie like Sin City, which in itself is a great piece of artwork that mirrors the artwork that it's based off of pretty well. Like, but his whole character of Marv was perfect for that.
I didn't listen to anything because I was going like, John made good decisions.
As I look around the room right now, I'm pretty sure we can all disagree with that.
No. Who's an actor or a director that has fallen off the grid that you wish would make a comeback? Somebody, maybe they've made destructive life choices, maybe they just disappeared. Who do you have, anybody who comes to mind?
Well, I have a list.
You have a list?
Yeah.
We don't have that kind of time, John. Come on.
We have plenty of time.
It depends on if your internet stays up or not.
That's true too.
But I'll go first and say I watched a ton of John Cusack over the weekend between
that's great.
One Crazy Summer, High Fidelity. Yes. He's just so good, even in like small roles when he's in Con Air, or even like just what was that one? Identity that he was in was really good. I think he's a guy who can have some really interesting like second story type stuff in the older years that he goes forward. Like if he made stuff in the vein of like Runaway Jury or do a little bit of like the crazy, like Pushing Tin. I think those kind of movies would really work for John today. Plus, he's from Chicago, so it'd be great to see him back on the scene and doing stuff. And I think he's just a quintessential, like, he could do funny, he could do serious, he can do creepy evil villain. He's got a wide range, so it'd be great to see John back on the scene.
I thought about that on and off, but then, like, I remember that show that you insisted that I had to watch that's on Amazon, Troy.
Which one was that? Oh, yeah. The comic book one.
Yes, where he plays essentially the villain, and I go, and I like every time I was like, you know, John Cusack really needs to be, and then I remember him in that, and I go, nope, never mind. So mad at you.
I thought it was good, only because it was like the quintessential of what we were going through with the pandemic at the time and the vaccines That's rolling out, too. And I was like, this is like exactly how America feels right now.
Yeah, I have to be honest. There's part of the reason why I didn't like that show so much was because I kept on thinking, is this what we're going through?
Yeah, is it kind of too close to home?
Yeah. Too close to home. It's not funny when it's too close to home, man.
John, you said you had a list. Who are some of the ones on your list?
Devin Sawa, which I just watched him in Hunter x Hunter. He's somebody who was great in the late 90s, early aughts. And, you know, you can't drive down the highway and see a thing with logs on it without thinking, oh, Devin Sawa, that's right, you know? And Hunter, he is fantastic. He has probably the smallest role in that movie, but he is still pretty fantastic. Rachel Lee Cook, somebody who was great in the late 90s, early aughts. I don't know why she just kind of fell out of the public eye, but she's somebody who always caught my attention, especially when she started showing up in Psych. I really appreciated her character.
She's adorable.
She is adorable. Colin Ferguson. So a lot of people may not know what name that is, but if you watch the show Eureka, he played the sheriff in Eureka. And Eureka's fine. It's a good show. It has its own little feeling to it. You got a bunch of geniuses who keep on nearly destroying the world because they just don't have anyone, you know, keeping them in check. And he's kind of like that, the person that keeps him in check, but he's not nearly as smart as anyone he's around. But his physical acting, his presence, everything about him, he is so enjoyable on screen. I really wish he would show up in bigger things. I think the most recent thing I've seen him do is the Maytag repairman commercials.
Right.
And I think that's a crime, you know, especially for how fantastic he is as far as his ability for slapstick, his ability for seriousness. It's just top notch. And finally, it's, you know, this is the other side of the coin. Taylor Lautner needs to be in things again. Ah. You know, I don't say that as a fan of Taylor Lautner. I say that as somebody who really appreciated him when he did Ridiculous Six. He was hysterical, and his ability even way back then, which Ridiculous Six was Adam Sandler comedy that was on Netflix only, and Taylor Lautner shows up and he's kind of a goofball, and he is just he's one of the funnier things in that entire movie.
One of the first ones that comes to mind for me is Billy Zane. Shout out to Dave McGraw, because I'm sure he feels, well, I know for a fact he feels the same way. But Billy Zane was always that charming, cool, could be a bad guy, could be a good guy sort of personality. And I really do miss his presence. Another one is Emilio Estevez. I can't remember the last thing I saw with him in it. And he was always talented. One that you guys are probably going to hard press not agree with, and that's Hayden Christensen.
No, you know what? The fact that he's still alive, you know,
true.
The fact that he hasn't thrown himself off a cliff yet, you know, let's give that guy a chance again. It's not his fault.
No, and I'm an apologetic. I liked him. I liked those movies. So I recognize they're not good. They're not good, but I did grow up with them because I'm younger than you guys, so I did enjoy them. But I do wish he had an opportunity to come back and do something in a leading role, because everything he's done has just been smaller supporting roles. And I think he has the potential there. It's just nobody in society, I think, has given him a chance after Star Wars. And then the last two that are on my list, Mike Myers, I miss him.
Yes. Yes.
I recently rewatched the Austin Powers movies, and full disclosure, and let me use my age. I don't ever talk about my age. I'm just under 30, so I'm a youngin. And for whatever reason, when I saw Austin Powers, I was younger, and I didn't realize he played all the roles until this year. And I was like, wow, he's incredibly talented. And this is also ridiculous.
You were today year old when you realized this?
Yes. It was a shocking revelation. So I really feel like he deserves more praise, and I would love to have that kind of humor back in our lives again, even though it was incredibly like sexist and just more misogynistic, and just there was a lot of problems, but it still makes me laugh, and that's okay, I guess, sometimes. And my last one, and he's starting to get some comeback, and I say this, I don't know, I want to taper this when I say it. Mel Gibson is so incredibly talented. And if he could truly change as a person, I think he deserves that opportunity to. I do believe in people getting second chances if they recognize their errors and they change those ways. Because I do think people grow up in unfortunate, I don't know, their environment can impact the way they see things and the way they approach things and who they become. Hopefully Mel Gibson is a different person today. That's my hope. And if that's the case, then I think he does, you know, he has a lot of potential. Because we've seen his work recently, and it's really good. So as long as he doesn't suck, I want him to come back.
You know, it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to remind yourself that people who aren't necessarily nice or good can also be talented. And you know, sometimes you just have to appreciate or force yourself to appreciate the talent and understand that the talent that you're appreciating does not necessarily mean you're appreciating that person.
Definitely. I mean, it doesn't take away from my enjoyment of him as an actor, because I think that from what I've understood, he's made some improvements as a human being. But I don't know. There's just something about, I think that gave him the opportunity, the world shutting him out gave him the opportunity to realize you were definitely in the wrong here, man. And so hopefully that's made him grow as a person. That's all I got to say. Do you guys have any more on your list? Troy, do you have any more?
No, we should probably see what the fans think, though.
We probably should.
All right, so looking at some of the things that some of our listeners had said, Austin Price, who's a name I haven't seen before in the list. So hi, Austin. Welcome to the show and being mentioned here. He actually brings up Robert Downey Jr. was on The Outs, a.k.a. Two Girls and a Guy, but Iron Man and Tropic Thunder turned that around. Well, I don't know if it was Tropic Thunder necessarily that turned it around, but for sure it was Iron Man. Although nobody else could play that character in Tropic Thunder as well as he did.
He's got a good point, though, because he was given that opportunity. It's not the first one that gave him his opportunity, but it was one of the first ones that started to turn his career around. Iron Man solidified it. Tropic Thunder, I do think, was like the introduction to his career turning around. But like, people didn't realize this is Robert Downey Jr. is making a comeback at that moment, right, until Iron Man hit, and you're like, yeah, he's back.
Brian Lowry said, I would like to see Anthony Michael Hall be in more things again. I loved him in The Dead Zone, but that really felt like his last starring role. Bill Pullman would be another person that he would love to see get another push. No clue why he never actually hit it big.
Bill Pullman strikes me as one of those people who purposely doesn't go for the biggest thing. Like he got his taste of stardom maybe with something like Independence Day and just decided to roll it back a little bit to be able to do more interesting things for himself. He's been great in The Sinner. I think he's pretty great in that show. As far as The Dead Zone with Anthony Michael Hall, I love that show. And I totally agree. Anthony Michael Hall needs to make a comeback. His ability of doing, like, especially his comedy timing is just wonderful. And now that he has that whole, I can totally see him do like a Leslie Nielsen thing moving forward and kind of like do slapsticky comedy with that serious face that he's grown into. It would be pretty great.
I mean, he had a great run on The Goldbergs. Might even be coming back in the fall when Goldbergs returns again at the school. And then he actually played a really great part on a show that I can't say the name of, so someone else could fill in the name for me. There was an episode in the seventh season called Brothers on The Blacklist.
Lost.
Where,
oh, The Blacklist.
Where he actually played opposite Donna Ressler, Diego Klattenhoff, and the two of them were actually... He wanted to be a cop, but never became a cop. And then Donald Ressler became the cop. And the two of them are actually going around trying to solve a crime in their hometown of Detroit. So like that whole concept was just such a great idea for like an actual show. Like one brother is a cop. One brother wanted to be a cop. And I think that would be a perfect fit for Anthony Michael Hall because he killed it. He killed it, slayed it in that episode. He was really good.
I don't doubt that at all. Anthony Michael Hall has always been an amazing talent. For whatever reason, he's just, never really took off after certain things. And Dead Zone, that's one of those shows that I absolutely just loved.
One of the comments that I cannot believe we did not mention this person is from Jennifer Miller. She says, Jason Bateman. He was a famous child actor. Then he went off the rails with drugs and alcohol. He made some questionable movie choices. Then after a hiatus, comes back sober and makes some fantastic comeback in movies and TV.
Yeah, that's a really good call, honestly. Him showing up when he did and just taking the industry by storm, it's a really good call.
He's
yeah,
got to be one of the most bankable actors today.
I mean, what, Ozark?
Oh, yeah.
Development, Game Night.
Game Night was so fun.
So good. Yeah.
Yes.
Mark Andrew mentions that he would like to see a comeback from M. Night Shyamalan, and I can't agree with that more. I thought this whole Glass and Split thing was like the return of form for M. Night, and I was really hopeful that we were going to see some really good things from him on that, and then you guys told me about Old, and it really just killed my mood for M. Night. But I really want to see him continue to show up and do things that are different, and he swings for the fences the way he does. And M. Night needs a good comeback.
Yeah, and I think Split was probably the last really good one he put out, to be honest. I mean, you have The Happening, you had Old. Glass only works because it's the last in the trilogy.
Right.
And The Village.
The Village,
Lady
I thought was,
in the Water.
Don't even go there.
Hey.
Like The Village.
Both of those are fine.
Yeah,
no.
The Village is okay, but Lady in the Water is great.
Garbage. You got
Stop
the
it.
First Amazing. Letter right. Garbage.
Amazing.
Garbage.
Well, see, the difference is that in The Village and Lady in the Water, granted, they're not Sixth Sense or Signs, but they at least had an interesting story that paid off and actually delivered on what they set up in the story at the beginning. And
I agree that Shyamalan always makes an interesting concept, but he is so hit or miss on his execution. And Lady in the Water did not have a promising or deliverable or enjoyable return at the end. I did not feel that way. I know many people feel that way. And many people feel the way you two do. But again, I think that speaks to his hit or miss quality as a director. He can make things that everyone unanimously agree is a classic. And then he can make movies. He'll come back with another one the next time and it'll be meh, meh from some people, garbage from some people, and then amazing from others.
Let's just say that in some cases he does. When he hits it out of the park, he hits it out of the park. In other cases, he becomes very divisive.
Well, yeah. I think it goes back to the comment we made about fans. I think fans set the expectations for these M. Night movies. I mean, from the trailer, Old looked amazing. Like, it's this really cool concept. Why are these people aging? I don't understand. And then you go sit and watch the thing, and you just like want to stab yourself in the eyes and wish you could age faster than they are, so you don't have to see the ending. It's just like,
that's brutal.
It was terrible.
Can I just die now, please?
It was so bad. I mean, the concept, when you actually see what the thing's all about, is actually a really cool concept. And I think that's why people suffer with Lady in the Water sometimes, is they expect, I'm going to an M. Night movie, therefore I'm going to see a slow burn setup with a very interesting thing that happens and a twist I don't see coming. That's the M. Night formula that we've all come accustomed to. Lady in the Water doesn't do that formula. And I think that's why people don't understand Lady in the Water. It literally is like, here's a children's book, and the whole movie is the children's book playing out live action. And so there is no twist at the end. The twist is like, the twist has been happening the whole time. And it was a different formula, and I think that's why it works, versus like, why are the plants killing people? I don't care. They're plants.
And just like, especially like supporting that whole children's book idea, the... like every character that they bring into it, or every group of characters, is exactly out of a children's book. You know, you got the guy who works out one half of his body and turns himself into a cartoon character by doing that. You got the group of sisters who all do something else, and the group of wise men. Like every batch of characters is in itself the perfect example of a children's book character.
And in the case of the village, I bike a lot through these forest preserves here where we are in Chicago. And every time I'm in the forest preserve, I'm just like, I'm waiting for a person to walk out of the woods. Because I thought where the movie itself might have had flaws, I thought the ending of, oh, they're literally just across the street from the Walgreens. Like, that was just like, oh my gosh, I never even thought of it that way. Because when that reveal happened, I literally now look at that every single time when I go to the forest preserve corner and the Walgreens is right across the street.
All right. Well, that's enough defending
M.
Night.
Yeah, because I'm not with you guys. There is another comment that I want to mention, though, and that's Stefan Smidebeck. I know, I feel like we mention him a lot, and we should give him credit for his weekly posts in the Facebook group, because it's become kind of like a regular thing I look forward to every week. He'll post in there a list of movies from a certain year, and then we all vote on movies that are worth watching. And he recently put up the top 20 movies from like 1980 until 2001. But anyway, he says, I remember that John Travolta was gone from movies and Tarantino brought him back, and he became a quite high profiled actor again in the 90s. Travolta was just known for that disco movie in the 90s, at least for me, and Grease. He also mentioned Rick Moranis. That's someone I would like to get back, but he is someone that left by own choice to care for his children after his wife passed away due to cancer. I read that he is coming back, an excellent comedian, I would say. And his last point is about Tarantino. He is the guy that brought back many actors that had downhill careers. Mentioned Travolta, but even Pam Grier was brought back right. There's probably more examples that is attached to his filmmaking. That's an excellent call.
That's very true. It's one of the gifts that Tarantino has brought us. He's one of the reasons why Samuel L. Jackson is as big of a name now as he is, because he put Samuel L. in so many different positions. They really give him a showcase.
Well, that's a great transition then to our upcoming releases coming into theaters next week, because Samuel L. Jackson's coming back to the theater. Oh yes, he is. That's right. The Protégé. If John Wick was a girl and the dog was Samuel L. Jackson, is what you would get in this movie. Rescued as a child by the legendary assassin Moody, Samuel L. Jackson is trained basically in the family business. And Anna, played by Maggie Q, is the world's most skilled contract killer. But when Moody is brutally killed, Anna vows revenge. It's written by Richard Wenk and directed by Martin Campbell. And I secretly want this to be a crossover universe with John Wick, because I think that would be amazing. We'll have to wait and see.
That sounds like it'd be pretty cool. Following that, we have The Night House. This is in theaters only. A widow begins to uncover her recently deceased husband's disturbing secrets. I feel like I've seen that movie, but this is directed by David Bruckner. This is written by Ben Collins and Luke I'm not even going to try to pronounce that ski last name that he's got. But it stars Rebecca Hall, Sarah Goldberg, and Vondi Curtis Hall. And that the trailer actually gives it a lot more to work with, and it looks really interesting and fun. Or scary, not so much fun.
Also releasing on August 20th, we have Reminiscence, which is coming to theaters and HBO Max. Nick Bannister, a private investigator of the mind, navigates the alluring world of the past when his life is changed by new client May. A simple case becomes an obsession after she disappears and he fights to learn the truth about her. It's written and directed by Lisa Joy. It stars Hugh Jackman, Rebecca Ferguson. It's got Tandy Newton. And I think it's going to be pretty great. How do you beat that cast?
How do you beat Lisa Joy, Westworld? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Shout out to Beyond Westworld.
BeyondWestworldPodcast.com right here on the Hollywood Outsider website as well. So make sure you check that out. Season 4 was delayed due to COVID issues. So hopefully we can get season 4 soon. But yeah, Lisa Joy, I'm really excited for this movie. But people that are really excited are the kids, right? Because this one's coming to Paramount Plus and theaters. It's Paw Patrol, the movie. That's right. When their biggest rival, Humdinger, becomes mayor of nearby Adventure City and starts wreaking havoc, Ryder and everyone's favorite heroic pups kick into high gear to face the challenge head on. With voice work from Dax Shepard, Tyler Perry, and Jimmy Kimmel, the movie is directed by Cal Brunker.
And our last movie is coming to VOD Digital. It's called Risen. Disaster unfolds when a meteor strikes a small town, turning the environment uninhabitable and killing everything in the surrounding area. Sounds pretty dark and sad. It's written and directed by Eddie Arya, and it stars Natalie Rose, Terry Purchase, and Buffy Ann Litoya. Not Buffy Summers. Super close, though.
Super close, like almost sisters.
Yes, they have the first and middle name that's the same. It just deviates a little at the end. Do you guys have any recent film or TV recommendations?
Yeah, I do. So last week on HBO Max, we had the drop of season 3 of Titans. And I really have to say, like, season 1 of that show feels like one of the cheapest things I've ever seen on TV. But the acting and the story is pretty solid, but about everything else feels like it's filmed in somebody's backyard. Season 2, you can kind of get the feeling that they are getting a little bit more money thrown at them, and they have more things to work with, and it starts, again, the acting is still top-notch, the story is still top-notch, the everything else about it is just kind of okay. It's getting some HBO Max money now in this season, and it is pretty phenomenal. It doesn't, sure, it almost looks like a CW show with cursing, if you want to really gauge it against anything, but it doesn't feel like any of the CW DC shows in any way, shape, or form. This has a bit of a more grit to it. It doesn't feel so cartoonish or formulaic as a lot of those shows do, and it feels like it's got its own story that is trying to transfer through the entire thing. So it is a pretty incredible show. So if you like the DC universe and you want to watch something that is based on that, I can say that Titans season 3 is pretty solid.
I'm glad that got life with HBO Max, because I remembered when Titans came out and it was that DC streaming service.
Yeah,
and it's like no one's going to watch that because no one's going to pay for the DC service except for DC people. And there were just some pretty good, you know, top notch actors coming on there. So to get to season 3 is like almost a miracle at this point. So kudos to the cast and crew for making that happen and getting the right money. And plus Minka Kelly. That's all I got to say.
That's okay.
Chad agrees.
A film I want to make sure I throw out there is one that was at the Sundance Film Festival. It's called Coda. It's on Apple TV Plus now. As a Coda, child of deaf adults, Ruby is the only hearing person in her deaf family. When the family's fishing business is threatened, Ruby finds herself torn between pursuing her love of music and her fear of abandoning her parents. I'd highly recommend you check that out if you like some of those, I don't know, get to your pull on the heartstrings type of movies.
Yeah, and Marley Matlin was actually on CBS this morning on Sunday, or CBS Sunday morning, and she did a really great interview about this too, about how she almost walked because they were going to hire hearing actors to play the deaf parents. And she said that she wasn't going to go for that. So that's why they were able to make that happen. So kudos to Marley for standing her ground and just because it's always a challenge with deaf movies because it always revolves around sound or music. Like I think like Mr. Holland's Opus and some of those other movies out there like that. Like I just wish they would make a deaf movie about deaf people rather than having it to be about the music or about the sound or what have you. So I just thought this is a very interesting story. I was glad to see that, you know, Marley stood up for it that way. So that made me more interested in actually seeing it because at first I didn't want to see it because it was such a cliche.
I definitely recommend it. So check it out. It's on Apple TV Plus now. Anything you've been watching, Troy?
If I watched anything, I would have gone and seen Free Guy and actually gone to the movie theaters, but I have been swamped. So unfortunately, I have not seen anything new, but I do have some things that are in the hopper for next week that look very interesting. So make sure you come back next week and we'll find out what all those are at that time.
Well, that's all for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Before we completely conclude and finish out with our What's This Movie, we just want to take a second to remind you to subscribe to our podcast, share it with your friends. It really does help the show. Visit us at thehollywoodoutsider.com, where you can find all of the reviews written by the talented team and all of the episodes. There are a lot of podcast episodes if you're looking for something to do. Maybe you're getting your commute back with work. Make sure you join us on Twitter and our Facebook group. We're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Facebook is a private group, but you can find us by searching The Hollywood Outsider. And there's a lot of really great engagement in there and a lot of really great people. So if you're wanting to connect, I highly recommend you do so. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. That is patreon.com/The Hollywood Outsider. John, what's this movie?
So for those who don't remember, because we haven't done this in a long time, and we decided to wait till Aaron was out of town to be able to actually throw this in here. What's this movie? I, this time, am going to throw a clip out here for you guys to listen to for one of the movies that I feel is like near and dear to my heart.